This is the Vet Alumni Podcast with Tech and Prem.
Vet Alumni Podcast. I'm Tech. He's Prem. Couple music producers talking Philly sports. What a huge show we have today.
Our best show to date. We are honored to have two very prestigious guests on our vet line today.
Yes.
Rob Motti, Associated Press sports writer, Hall of Fame voter, host of his own show on 97.5 The Fanatic here in Philadelphia.
He always asks the tough questions at the pressers.
Asks the tough questions. He's a real journalist, a real reporter.
Absolutely.
Vince Quinn, CBS Sports Radio, contributor for WIP, 94
yep,
WIP.
You've heard him. If you listen to WIP during the holidays, you've heard him.
Both these guys are going to join us today, and we're really excited to get their insight on the Eagles, the Sixers, the Phillies, Tech. The Saints came to Philadelphia and lost to Jalen Hurts.
Yes, they did. Jalen Hurts in his first NFL start. I mean, look, say what you want. Whether you're a Carson guy, whether you're a Jalen Hurts guy, Hurts had a great game, and he did things that you've been wanting to see Carson do all year, and you saw it with Jalen Hurts. He came out, no sacks taken.
Decisive.
Very decisive, and he got out of the pocket with quickness. When the O-line collapsed, he was quick to get out of there and either made a play with his feet or made a decisive throw, and most of the time, it was a good decision. A
couple really amazing throws. The back shoulder throw to Alshon Jeffrey, that's an NFL throw.
That was a tremendous throw.
It really was. And, you know, now he's shown in his two games coming in against Green Bay and then last week against the Saints, he made a couple really nice touchdown tosses. The toss to Greg Ward was a phenomenal throw, and then that throw to Alshon was too. He was running the ball well. You know, but the running, it's great because it reminds you of guys like Lamar Jackson, what they do.
It definitely reminded me a lot of Lamar.
Yeah, but he still has a ways to go to be an NFL quarterback.
I agree with that. But I think he's on his way there. I mean, look, that touchdown throw, speaking of that throw in particular, when he made that throw, he took such a vicious hit.
He stood there,
and boy, he just took that hit, and it was a sight to see.
And Jalen Reagor, two straight weeks, performing at a high level for two straight weeks, had a really nice catch and run across the middle, had the punt return touchdown against the Packers. Looks like the kid might be a player after all.
Yeah, I mean, look, just like everyone says, the verdict is out on Jalen Hurts. I feel the same way about Jalen Reagor. I feel the kid obviously can play. I don't necessarily see the burst, the speed that I thought I was going to see from him. I don't see that breakaway speed. I just don't see it. Maybe it's me. But when he runs his routes, it's like any other receiver out there. I don't see that next level speed that they drafted him for. I don't see that.
Yeah, well, we need to see some more, you know. I think against the Cardinals this week, we have a good shot. Kyler Murray is obviously a phenomenal young quarterback as well. Very similar to Jalen Hurts in a lot of respects with the movement outside of the pocket and the arm. Now, I mean, their arm strength, I think Jalen Hurts, he has some serious zip on those passes. He might have a stronger arm than Kyler Murray.
He does. I think Kyler Murray is a good quarterback, but, you know, I feel like if you go in with the mindset and the same game plan defensively that you went in with Taysom Hill, I believe you can contain Kyler Murray to a large extent.
The question is,
I think you can.
The question is DeAndre Hopkins without Darius Slay back there. But I'm gonna get into some of that in a later segment.
Well,
he's in
concussion protocol. Is he definitely going to be out for this week?
Maybe not. I guess the jury's out on that. I just heard it was a pretty severe head injury. Obviously, they all are with concussions. We know about CTE. We know about all the serious things that are covered related to repeated head injury. So I think they're going to be precautious with a guy that, you know, is your best secondary player.
Yeah, but, you know, we need him out there.
Nevertheless, this team could still win the NFC East.
Vet Alumni. And now, it's the Vet Line.
Why don't you answer your phone?
Tonight, we're humbled to have joining us on the Vet Line, Rob Motti, Associated Press sports writer, Hall of Fame voter, and weekly host of his own show here in Philly on 97.5 The Fanatic. Rob, let me start by thanking you for taking the time out of your day to talk Birds and Sixers with us.
Oh, absolutely, guys. It's my pleasure. Thank you. It's an honor to be here with you.
Honor to have you. And we'll dive right into Birds talk, Rob. If you're the Eagles right now, how are you approaching the quarterback situation in 2021 and headed into the offseason?
It's an incredible, difficult dilemma this team has. I wouldn't have benched Carson Wentz in the first place. I thought he earned the right to work his way out of this. I wanted to see him end the year on what could have been a positive note. But now that they made the switch, Jalen Hurts had some success against the Saints. They put themselves in an even more difficult situation because if Hurts comes out and wins against the Cardinals, you got to stick with the kid. And then you're going to have to go into the offseason potentially with Carson Wentz coming off the last memory, him being benched against Green Bay. Contract kicks in next year. You got a backup quarterback who's played maybe well. We don't know. We'll see over the course of the next 3 weeks. And you got the franchise quarterback coming off a bench, making $30-plus million a year. It's a tough, tough, difficult situation. Unless the Eagles are willing, really, to move on from Carson, eat some dead cap money, take that hit through a trade, he's got to be the starter next year. And I don't know how you go into next year with him ending this year benched against Green Bay. So maybe I look for an opportunity. You couldn't go back to Carson after Jalen Hurts and the team beat the Saints. You couldn't do that.
No.
But if they have any, if they lose to Arizona or if Jalen struggles against Arizona, you can make a case where, all right, we gave the kid a couple opportunities. We know a little bit of what he can do. But really, if Jalen Hurts plays four great games, what do we know about him anyway? I go back to Bobby Hoying. He played four great games too. So, you know, maybe he becomes trade bait. Maybe you can increase his trade value. They have an incredibly difficult decision to make, and it's further complicated by making this switch. I don't know what their way out is going to be, man. I haven't seen anything like this.
Me neither. And you reminded me of something Howie Roseman said, I believe, on draft night. We want to have a quarterback factory. Now, with that, I know. And you alluded to some of the complications that can cause. What if you have a $30 million backup? That's just not an option. So do you think that they are just trying to up Hurts' value more so, or they don't even really know what they're doing?
That could be a possibility. I kind of feel like, first of all, when Doug Peterson said last week that this was his decision alone, I'm not buying that. There's $128 million on the line. Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman are involved in a decision to bench Carson Wentz. So I kind of feel like Doug Peterson is looking for maybe, well, he's certainly looking for a spark to the offense. It wasn't working with Carson Wentz, and whatever they were doing, it was a combination of factors, and it wasn't working. And Carson is being scapegoated right now. But Doug can look at it from this perspective. If he has some success with Jalen Hurts the rest of the way, he can help save his job, because a lot of people think he's on a hot seat. So he could say, hey, it's not me. It's not my offense. It's not my system. It's the quarterback. So this helps him in that way. It also helps Howie Roseman in that he took a lot of heat for drafting Jalen Hurts in the second round with the 53rd overall pick. Now, all of a sudden, if Jalen Hurts plays well for four games, Howie can say, yeah, about that criticism, I know what I'm doing here, Mr. Quarterback Factory. So this kind of helps, right? It kind of helps Doug, and it kind of helps Howie if Jalen has success. I don't look at the game against the Saints and go, he's going to be the franchise quarterback for a decade. The kid ran the ball 15 times. I don't count the kneel downs, and that's not sustainable. And he completed 57% of his passes. I'm not trying to knock Jalen Hurts. It was an outstanding performance in his first career start against the number one ranked defense in the NFL. But he's got a long way to go.
Hey, Rob, I think it was a month or so ago, you did a quarterback breakdown in your show that was just brilliant. You basically compared Carson's stats to Hall of Fame and championship quarterbacks in their fifth season, and the numbers were just eye-opening. It definitely changed my perspective. So with that being said, who's to blame for Carson's regression this year? Is it the coach, the GM, the quarterback coach? Is it Carson opting out of the plays that are being called? What's the reason for it?
You know, that's like the million-dollar question, because honestly, if the Eagles knew that answer, I think they would be able to figure it out. I really think, you know, we all want to just put the blame on the quarterback or the head coach or both. But really, man, you got to look at all the factors, right? And it was kind of encouraging for Carson, I think, last week after he got benched, where other players from Jason Kelce, Miles Sanders, Fletcher Cox said, hey, you know, it's not all his fault. And he certainly hasn't played well. That's a given. I'm not going to sit here, and even though I'm being called a Carson apologist, I won't give you excuses. I'll give you what I believe are explanations from what I gather from talking to people. And one of the many reasons, obviously, is the offensive line. The offensive line has been so depleted. He's constantly under duress. He's dropping back into a pocket that collapses instantly. And he's got to make quick decisions and throw the ball to receivers who aren't open. So you got receivers who aren't creating separation. You got young, inexperienced guys who aren't running routes crisply, who aren't breaking at the right time. They got a timing and rhythm offense, and that's being disrupted because they're also getting covered bump and run. And when you got a secondary bumping guys because they don't fear them, they don't fear them going deep, they're consistently disrupting the flow of the offense. So you got that factor, the offensive line, and then the play calling that doesn't really fit Carson's strengths. And how often, guys, I know you talk about it, we all do, why doesn't Carson Wentz roll outside the pocket? Last year, outside the pocket, he had the best stats in the NFL. And all of a sudden, this year, they're not doing it as much. Why? They have success when he does it. Every time he does it, you look up and he's throwing 24 yards to Rich Rod for some reason. Right?
And that guy has amazing hands, let's just say that.
Right?
But, Rob, I totally agree with you. When you think back to last December, we went on a historic run of four straight NFC East wins on the way to the title. That was a remarkable stretch of Carson becoming the first quarterback in league history to throw for 4,000 yards with not one receiver over 500 yards. So it really is the million-dollar question, like you said. And I just hope that for the sake of the team and our fan base that they find some clarity here to make it work.
And I believe he's fixable. And I talked about this on my show Saturday, and I turned it into, you know, how we all do those Twitter polls. And I was like, I believe he's fixable. I believe he can get back to MVP form. Will it be here with Doug? Will it be here with a new coach? Mm-hmm. Will it be somewhere else? Or do you think that won't happen? And an overwhelming majority think he will return to MVP form. And many people like me feel it just may have to be elsewhere, because This is such a tough situation for Carson Wentz. He's living in the shadow of Nick Foles. He's living now in a situation where he's been benched for a quarterback. And if Jalen Hurts has success going down the next three games, it's going to be an almost impossible situation for Carson to win unless he wins a Super Bowl. That's the only way he'll be accepted in Philly.
It's amazing. And you also mentioned him having success somewhere else. Obviously, we've heard the rumblings about Frank Reich and Indianapolis, the connection they had when they were here. What type of credence do you give to that possibility, or is that simply just conjecture at this point?
No, I think there's legitimate possibilities with that, because you look at their situation. It's a good football team. And they have Phillip Rivers on a one-year contract, and he's obviously towards the very end of his career right now. And he may be able to. He's going to get them into the playoffs. How well will they do in the playoffs? I really think that Carson would be a really terrific fit for Frank Reich. The two of them have a great relationship. I also think Bill Belichick might have some interest in Carson Wentz with Josh McDaniels. That Cam Newton's not the long-term solution there. They're building an offense around him running the football. And through a trade, any team that acquires, and it's so complicated, guys, when we try and figure out the cap hit and all this, but it does boil down to this. If the Eagles were to trade him, the team that acquires Carson is looking at a two-year contract in the mid-40s, which is a very decent number for a starting quarterback to evaluate for 2 years. So I think there'll be interest on the trade market. It's a matter of whether the Eagles want to pull the trigger.
Yeah, it's a big mess, but I hope for everybody involved that we have what we want, and that's simply another Super Bowl ring. like every team's fan base. Now, changing gears quickly to the Sixers, how you feeling about the moves that were made so far, the overall vibe of the team as we are set to tip off our preseason tonight?
Yeah, I think that it's been an outstanding. Sixers won the offseason, right? When you can bring in Daryl Morey and Doc Rivers and then assemble what is a star-studded cast of assistant coaches, and then you move on from Al Horford's contract. They were able to trade Richardson. They bring in Dwight Howard and Seth Curry, and they draft Maxey, and they get Danny Green. It's been a great offseason. It's going to be really exciting to see what this team can do. I want to see if Ben Simmons can take his game to the next level, if he can become an elite player, a complete player. And if Doc Rivers can't do it, I don't know that anybody will be able to do it. So I think there's really high hopes and expectations for this team, but it's a tough conference, guys. It's a really tough conference.
Speaking of Ben Simmons, Rob, a report surfaced that said Houston wants Ben Simmons and 3 first-round picks for James Harden. On the record, would you make that trade?
Absolutely not. You know, I responded to one of my buddies yesterday, and I was like, I would trade Simmons for Harden in 2 1s, not the other way around.
Right.
You know, you give up. Like,
I said, I'd give him Tobias Harris in 3 1s.
Yeah, I would do that, right? Would do that
absolutely.
For Maxey, but I'm not giving Ben Simmons. And then I would be really reluctant, guys, to trade Ben Simmons straight up for James Harden, let alone 3 1s.
Me too. Ben Simmons he's still young. He's only played 3 years. He's a 2-time All-Star and Rookie of the Year. The kid's going places, and we haven't even seen him with Doc and this All-Star coaching staff yet.
Yeah, you can't do it, and I don't think Daryl Morey will do that. I really don't. I think that's one of the things, you know, when you hear trade reports and trade rumors and circulation and stuff like that, I've been on the other end of those phone calls when agents or in free agency or guys on, you know, front office types with teams are trying to drive up the price. And it's just a matter of if you want to put that out there and float it out there. I don't run with reports like that because I just can't. AP doesn't like that. We don't do speculation.
Right.
But that's nothing more than trying to drive up a price. I don't believe that at all because the Sixers could not do it. There's no way they would do it.
Well, I'm glad to hear you clarify that
because
we felt the same way, but we had to find out from the Rob Mod. So I had a question too, Rob, as far as you being a Hall voter, which is very intriguing to me. You're tasked with a very unique position to help install who we consider the verified greatest of all time guys. So when did you first vote on a Hall ballot, and what would you say was the most challenging vote you ever had to make?
So it started 10 years ago. You have to be 10 years a member of the Baseball Writers Association of America, an accredited institution like AP or another a newspaper or whatever it may be. But you got to be on the beat for 10 consecutive years, and then you get a vote. And after that, you get a vote for life unless they change the rules maybe in the past 5 years, where if you're no longer an active member, then you have to give up your vote. I remember Andre Dawson, I believe, was on the first one of the first ones on the ballot. I had Edgar Martinez. I don't know, was that last year or the year before?
Career 300 hitter,
that was
hitter,
a tough one for me.
Yeah,
that may have been one of the tougher ones where I really wrestled with it, and ultimately I did give him the Hall of Fame nod. You know, because of his numbers as a DH and then just looking at all those numbers. But ultimately, I decided, I think he is a Hall of Fame voter. It's interesting because sometimes you get teams sending out a packet trying to make a case for a guy. And then teams just don't. Yeah, some teams don't do it at all. Wow. Which I don't understand why they wouldn't.
Like lobbying.
Recently, yeah, the Phillies this year actually sent out something really good on Bobby Abreu and Scott Rolen. And I think you need to do that for your guys, because you have to bring it to the attention of voters. Now, the tough part is, I feel, for me, the tough part is narrowing it down, because you're only allowed a maximum of 10. This year, it's not as difficult. It's not as loaded of a ballot. But there have been years where I've had a loaded ballot, and I didn't vote for Roy Halladay.
Wow.
Like, I want to.
Right.
I wanted to, right? And I couldn't fit him in that year on the ballot, and he got elected into the Hall of Fame. And, it sounds stupid not to have voted for Roy Halladay, but that year I thought there were like 14 or 15 worthy guys, and he was a first time on the ballot, and I wanted to vote for the guys who had been on the ballot longer, and I wanted to get them in. And it's unfortunate guys like Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens still haven't gotten in because they continue to be on the ballot, and they take votes away from other players.
Yeah, that's a tricky one with the performance-enhancing situation. I think that there's probably a lot of mixed opinions by other writers in your position on that as well, ranging from don't worry about it as much to these guys could never get in.
Yeah, and I've been consistent in that I vote for the guys, and I do it for several reasons. One of them is personal. I know I went from being a scrawny 185-pound guy to like jacked up 225 without taking anything illegal, nothing at all.
Right.
So I was able to put on 40 pounds of muscle in a 5-year span using everything that you can buy at a GNC or somewhere else. So players can do that. They can accomplish that. I also took some substances that were banned by Major League Baseball, but are available for me or you. So I don't agree with that. And then I also say, well, we know about certain guys, but we don't know about other guys. So if guys weren't implicated in the Mitchell report, or guys didn't get caught, yet we're voting for them, but other guys we're holding them out, I just strictly vote by the numbers. And lastly on this argument, guys, I always bring up in the 60s and in the 70s, players talked about amphetamines, that they were using greenies. And that helps you with your hand-eye coordination. And I'll tell you this, as a former baseball player, I played in college. If you have great hand-eye coordination, that makes you a better hitter than if you're jacked up.
Oh, yeah.
And so if it was okay for Hank Aaron and guys of his era to use greenies and amphetamines, and that wasn't considered a performance-enhancing substance, then I don't know that steroids or anything that helps you build muscle should be put in the same category. I think they should both be looked upon, vote by the numbers, and that's it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I didn't really think about the amphetamine angle, but you're right. That would lend to hitting a baseball better because you're just more on point with your timing. And that's the key to baseball. It's all timing. Wow. Well, I appreciate that insight on that. One last question I have for you, Rob, is I hear you asking tough questions at your press conferences, and I love it. Tech loves it, too. We talk about it all the time when we always watch all the pressers. What drives you every day motivation-wise and then to ask those questions, even if they might not be appreciated by the people that you're asking them of?
I want truth, right? I'm seeking truth, and I'm seeking accuracy. And sometimes I don't believe in false narratives, and I hate that. I really do. I hate seeing false narratives spread. I'll give you an example. Yeah. Monday Night Football. I don't know if you saw this. I tweeted about it. It went wild. And Booger McFarland, during a halftime show, puts up a quote from Miles Sanders calling Jalen Hurts a natural leader, and we needed that. And he uses that to say, see, Jalen Hurts is a natural leader. Carson Wentz isn't. Well, in the full quote, because I was on the call and I have the quote right there. He goes on to say he did this, this, and this just like Carson.
Yes,
does.
Right. Yes, right? I heard that.
So
context.
I absolutely hate when media tries to push a false narrative.
Yeah, especially so guys that ain't from the area.
Right, exactly. Here's something for your listeners that they really need to know. When you get quote unquote insider information about the team that you really follow, and it's coming from a national guy, it ain't all that inside. because no. they don't know like the beat writers know. And I have great relationships with the players, with the coaches. So I can ask, like Doug and I communicate with Doug off the Zoom calls, and we get along tremendously. We did an event together a few years ago at the American Bible Society in Philly. So he knows I'm not out to get him, and he's comfortable with my questions. He's gotten snippy with me, but yeah. Also he understands that I'm just trying to bring it to a place of clarity. Hey, let's make sure the right information is out there, because a lot of people are running with false narratives. Another example, on Sunday after the game, when Doug Peterson didn't want to announce that Jalen Hurts is going to be the starter. And when he kind of downplayed that a little bit, and he talked about what a team victory it was. Well, one, it really was. Jalen Hurts completed 57% of his passes. He wasn't all that good throwing a ball. He ran terrific. It was a total team effort like we haven't seen all year. Yet I heard people afterwards say, well, he doesn't want to announce that because Carson's got a fragile psyche. What are you talking about? If Carson has a fragile psyche, they wouldn't have drafted Hurts in the first place. They wouldn't have benched him for Jalen Hurts, right?
You're right, so, man.
The fragile psyche argument, that whole thing, that's also a false narrative that's been floated out there, and people run with it, and that's the problem in this era of like people just putting up whatever information, anonymous sources that aren't accurate, like the phony made-up story about Carson a couple years ago.
Joe Santoliquito, right?
That story was pure garbage, and I can't get into all I know about it, but I'll tell you this. I don't know anybody in that locker room who believes that.
Oh, inside information. You heard it here first from Rob Motti. Rob, we definitely appreciate your time, man. In closing, I want to tell you about something we're starting here at the Vet Alumni. We call it the Vet Alumni Members Association. It's going to be comprised of a body of professionals in the Philly sports media world like yourself, who are also heavily influenced by the existence of that amazing location we know as the Vet. So we'd like to ask you to be the first official member of the Vet Alumni Members Association.
Oh, fellas, it's a tremendous honor. You want me to give you real quick my greatest Vet memory?
Yes. Absolutely.
I had season tickets in a 700 level end zone, and I was there jumping up and down at 4th and 1. The 4th and 1... My cousin and I were looking at each other, and we're like, he's going to do it again! And he did it again! I couldn't believe it. That, to me, was one of the greatest memories I ever had at the Vet. 700-level end zone. I experienced a lot of things there for the first time in my life, and it was quite a learning experience.
Yeah, man, I remember that game. I was only 12 years old. However, I was watching on my living room floor with my buddies. So again, Rob, we really appreciate it, man.
You got it, fellas.
Have a great night, man.
You got it. And thank you for that honor. I love it. It's awesome.
Rudolph, take us to where we can let our sleigh bells rock.
Pro Line Music.
Everything for the musician. Tis the season to get great gear at great prices.
Pro Line Music.
Buy a guitar, get 4 free lessons in store or online.
Pro Line Music.
Don't forget our on-site repair service center. It's been a tough year to say the least, so get the best price possible. Only at
Pro Line Music. Call 215-736-8055.
One more time.
215-736-8055.
Tell them what we're close to.
Trenton, Ewing, Lawrenceville, Yardley, Morrisville, Fairless Hills, Levittown, Lower Makefield.
What's the name again?
Pro Line Music.
Pro Line Music. Everything for the musician.
Numbers don't lie.
Numbers don't lie.
You know that.
Men lie, women lie, numbers don't.
Numbers don't lie.
Look at the numbers. The numbers don't lie.
Keeping it real. 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 Keeping it real.
Numbers don't lie.
Oh man, here we are yet again.
What a week for the numbers.
I'll tell you, man, I'm so impressed with Miles Sanders and his breakaway runs.
Yeah, me too.
There have been 11 breakaway runs this year in the NFL, 70-plus yards, right? Miles Sanders has 3 of them. His most recent, this past week, an 82-yard run in the Eagles' win over the Saints on Sunday, was actually the sixth fastest run of the week, clocking him at a 20.95 miles per hour speed.
Wow.
Now, Tech, that same run was also simultaneously the second most improbable rush this week across the entire league, with 70 yards gained over the expected yardage. So, to add to my feeling about how impressed I am with Miles Sanders, for the season across the entire NFL, 32 starting running backs, Miles has three of the top 10 most remarkable rushes.
Shout out to Coach Scrap Wilson, because I was hoping that Miles Sanders would have the kind of game and that they would use him the kind of way that they did this Sunday, because we needed it.
I totally agree, and I spoke with Coach Scrap on Sunday during the game, and he said that he did forward the interview to Miles, his mother, and his brother.
I had a feeling that he heard the show and had that kind of a game after hearing the
show. You can only imagine that he heard it.
Yeah.
So only Aaron Jones, of other running backs in the NFL, only Aaron Jones of the Packers has more than one run in the top 10 most remarkable rushes. He has two. So not even Derrick Henry can match Miles Sanders in that category with just one appearance in the top 20.
There you go.
And that's Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
So
King
Henry. We have our undisputed running back of the future at this point. There is no debating that. Again, shout out to Miles. Shout out to Coach Scrap, who was our guest last week on the Vet Line. Next, Tech, Jalen Hurts.
Hurts.
On just a 5-yard rush, clocked the 15th fastest speed across the entire league, hitting 20.48 miles per hour on just a 5-yard rush. That's what you call acceleration. Our guy Fletcher Cox landed on the fastest sacks list this week, coming in at 14th with his 3.57 second takedown of Taysom Hill. And a few things around the league that are worth noting, Tech, because I really like numbers.
Let's hit it.
San Francisco running back Raheem Mostert, across the entire league for the whole season, has not just the best fastest speed, the top fastest speed across the entire league, also the second fastest speed across the entire league, 23.09 miles per hour being clocked on game action, is the fastest speed any NFL player has reached all season long. He runs downhill with big strides, and if San Francisco can just keep him on the field, that is a legitimate running back right there, Tech.
Yep, could have been an Eagle. We had him.
Could have been an Eagle, like many, many, many names we have alluded to on this show.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, because I'm a University of Pittsburgh alumni, I have a soft spot for former Pitt players, and former Pitt wide receiver and Bengals wide receiver Tyler Boyd has the most incredible yards after the catch play across the entire league for the entire season, with 68 yards above the expected yardage in Week 13. Tech, numbers don't lie.
No, they don't.
Vet Alumni. And now, it's the Vet Line.
Answer the damn phone.
Joining us now on the Vet Line, you've heard him on 94 WIP. He's currently on CBS Sports Radio, someone whose opinion I greatly respect. Vince Quinn. Vince, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Prem, what's up, man? What's going on, Tech?
So, Vince, I'm just going to dive right into it, man. If you had to choose between somehow moving Carson in the offseason despite his contract or heading into 2021 with both quarterbacks on the roster, what are you doing if you are in charge of the team?
If I'm doing it based on what's happening right now, because the tough thing is with Hurts, it's only been one game, and honestly, I think he looked good in the game for a rookie making his first start, but he didn't blow me away. So for where I'm at right now, I keep Wentz. As ugly as it is, I'd keep him for now.
Yeah, I agree. I think that personally, I'm with Seth Joyner on this one. I'd like to see somewhat of a competition in 2021 instead of just kind of, you know, let's ship Carson off to Indianapolis or whatever they would do that some people are advocating for, you know?
Well, yeah, and it's so funny because we're so quick to give him away to the Colts and assume that the Colts, one, that Frank Reich wants him, and two, that Frank Reich could make it work with Wentz over there. So it's weird to think, like, yeah, Wentz could be really great in another place, but we're just going to give up on him here, especially if you're going to fire the coach, right? Like, if you're going to fire Doug Peterson and then you have a whole other coach coming in, why are you giving Wentz away to somebody else so they can figure it out and not see what that new coach can do with Carson Wentz? Like, it just doesn't make sense to me to throw him away yet.
So, with that being said, you think Carson Wentz can be rejuvenated?
I think he can. Now, and here's the funny thing, because here's me in some degree talking out of both sides of my mouth. As an Eagles fan, selfishly, I don't want to give up on him yet. I think there are other coaches that it's worth giving a shot and seeing how it goes, what they can do with Carson. But let's be honest, Carson has a lot of baggage in this city, and it starts with being the number two pick. Then it goes to all the Nick Foles stuff. Now it's only going to continue. Like, if Hurts wins a couple of games the rest of the way, and you're talking, I mean, what, Arizona, Washington, the Giants, or Dallas, rather. It's like, you're not playing good teams. He could win out. He could win two of the next three games. If he wins three of four to end the season, like, a lot of people are going to look at this and go, yeah, this is Hurts' team, or at least enough people are going to want to see him start next year. So Wentz has got a lot of baggage, you know, and could he be better off just going to another city where he doesn't have any of that and he's coming in as a fresh guy? Like, think of Ryan Tannehill, right? Tannehill not doing anything with the Dolphins, ninth pick in the draft. Adam Gase was there, so, you know, maybe that was more of an Adam Gase thing. But yeah, he didn't do anything down there, right? And then once he goes to Tennessee, he's the backup, but he gets a shot a couple of weeks into the season. And what do you know? He's really good. He's completing 70% of his passes. They're a playoff team. Like, that's a pretty good switch. Can Carson Wentz basically be Ryan Tannehill? That's what I think of. I could see it really working out somewhere else.
Flipping to the other side of the ball, Josh Sweat isn't a starter. Make it make sense, Vince.
Well, yeah, it's a great question, right? And part of it is, it's just Derek Barnett has been a first-round pick, and I guess he's not awful, so they've decided that, okay, let's just keep Barnett in there and see where this whole thing goes. I mean, here's the other thing, too, right, guys? Because think about the linebacker position. I mean, Alex Singleton's been an underrated part of this season. That guy's been good for
a backup linebacker
they got out of the CFL, right?
Yeah.
Right? He's good. So why did it take so long to go from Nate Gary, who nobody liked and was clearly awful, to Alex Singleton, who, at the very least, he makes mistakes here and there. He's not a great linebacker, but he's a fun linebacker that makes some things happen. Like, why did that take so long? Well,
he's
Jim Schwartz has
all
a loyalty
over the field.
Issue. Yeah, it's fun, and you can see it. You can feel it. You go, wow, at least I don't know if he's like – he's never going to be the best linebacker on a team, but – he deserves to be in the rotation on a good team. And I go, that's something. But that was a Jim Schwartz problem. He wouldn't make the switch. So it's probably a Jim Schwartz issue. I mean, honestly, there's no other reason. You see Sweat out there all the time. You just go, oh, my goodness, this guy has just grown into a monster. He looks great.
He really does. I'm excited about some of the silver lining things we found out this year, Singleton being one, Josh Sweat, obviously, and there's a couple others that we could talk about, but why do you think Doug wins with backups so frequently and can't win with a guy who was the talk of the league just three seasons ago?
Well, yeah, that's the question of the century, right? Like, you look at the whole thing, and it's so strange. Here's the thing that's really bothered me, right? Because I've been a big-time proponent, honestly, since 2018. I felt for a long time that Doug Peterson wasn't a good play caller, and I thought Reich was the genius and all this different stuff. But you see the way things change with, when you finally see this switch where you're going from Wentz to Hurts, Doug coached a really good game. You know, he coached a good game. He was using Hurts the right way. Hurts also, you know, was making some things happen on his own. But he was able to do that within the plays that Doug was calling. And I'm starting to think now, as much as I thought it was on Doug, it feels like, one, those guys aren't on the same page, Doug and Carson. And two, Carson wants to be somebody that he's not. And when he's trying to sit back there all the time and pass and not even just do the quick stuff, the easy stuff, but it's trying to get the ball 15, 20 yards down the field a lot. Like, he's not good at doing that. And when he's really not feeling himself, he doesn't belong in the league. You know, he just looks awful. So I'm wondering if it's Wentz is a bad play caller, like Wentz's vision for what the offense is. It is not working for Wentz, but Doug's trying to build it and make him happy and give it a go. And then once he gets out of there, Doug's doing the basic stuff and it works. Like, it might be Wentz is just this bad at it. And he needs a new coach to kind of set him straight.
Yeah, it could just be a broken situation. And I think in professional sports, sometimes, you know, a broken situation, like you kind of alluded to Ryan Tannehill, for example, just has to be reset. Now, the difference with Ryan Tannehill was he never had success with the Dolphins, whereas Carson was basically the MVP of the league. But, you know, do you think the Eagles right now can still win the East? Yes, right? You think yes, and that's why it's crazy.
Yes, it is crazy because Arizona's a really good team, but they're kind of like the NFC version of the Raiders. You know what I mean? Like, they could beat a great team on a given day, but also they can just look god-awful. So I don't know. Could they beat Arizona? Yeah, like they could feasibly beat Arizona. It'd be kind of crazy, but I can see it happening. And then, okay, you're getting to the end of the season there. You got Dallas and Washington, especially if the defense is playing the way it's generally been, although losing McLeod is a big deal. But, like, Hargrave's been good and Sweat's been good and Fletcher Cox has been better over the second half of the season. Like, there's enough things that you look at the defense, you go, okay, Washington might not score more than, like, 14 points, 17 points in a game. So if Jalen Hurts and what they've got going now, if that can put up 17 to 20 points, they could beat Washington. They'd probably beat Dallas. So they could win out. I mean, they could really actually win the last four games of the season. It's Doug Peterson magic again because it's 2018, 2019, and 2020 just going on a run at the end of the year. And then the Eagles, you know, they probably get blown out in the first round of the playoff game. Right. But that's what you're looking at right now. I can see it.
It's remarkable. It's unprecedented because you've never had, you know, four wins at this point in the season. And you're looking at a potential division title.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a historically bad year, you know? The division was supposed to be one of the worst in the history of football. It really was for a while. But now, what do you know? Like, the Giants have figured things out, and they're starting to win some games. And Washington, I mean, they beat Pittsburgh, which is, like, a really huge win for them. So the division's turning out to be bad. It's below average everywhere, but it's turning out to not be god awful everywhere. And so that's the biggest change. Yeah, it's suddenly competitive, and it's weird. I'm curious about you guys. This is the thing that everybody I think is kind of asking themselves: is like, do you guys actually want them to win the division?
I mean, I personally don't. I don't. I want a better draft pick. That's where I'm at. But I know Prem disagrees.
I mean, listen. You play to win
the game. I understand.
We all know that.
I understand.
But we also know that something that says a lot for professional players is postseason experience. Just being in that environment, feeling the extra nerves, playing at the higher game speed. I value that experience for young players more than I value getting a better shot at a guy that might not work out anyway.
Now, that's an interesting point, right? Because that's the thing that's starting to sway me. Like, I'm not there yet with them wanting to win games. My general thought's been I want Hurts to look at least pretty good, if not great, and I want them to lose. But the thing that does change is, like, okay, if I can actually get – and how much – by the way, how much does this burn up people if Jalen Hurts is getting and starting and finishing a playoff game before Carson Wentz does? Like, how crazy would that be?
Oh, wow.
Right? But that's what we're looking at, because that's the thing. If Hurts wins the games to get you into the playoffs and win the division, you've got to start Hurts. You can't bench him for Wentz. The only way you can do it is if, you know, Hurts comes into the game in the playoffs and he's god awful and you're just trying to rally the season in some fourth quarter last ditch thing. But you'd have to play Hurts through that game for the most part, and that's good for him and it's good for the franchise, you know? So it's just like, and that's the Eagles' problem. Everything they do is messy for one reason or another. Like, there's no clean scenario for any of this.
No.
There's really not. There's really not.
Moving on to the Phillies. Vince, what are your thoughts on the Dave Dombrowski hiring?
Well, yeah, the weird thing is that the reputation is you're getting a guy that has a track record of trading farm systems and building a contender. Now, Plentak already tried to do that a couple of years ago, so clearly you look at the farm system, it's like, all right, well, it's not any good, so I don't know what you're going to trade, and also, where are they going to get aggressive? You know what I mean? It's not like they're going to go and make up for that, okay, we don't have a farm system, so let's go big on free agency for another year. They're not going to do that. They're terrified of the luxury tax. Middleton is laying off employees left and right, and so for the franchise to be where it is like that, I mean, I just have a hard time believing that they're going to build themselves into a winner that quickly. So I don't know if Dombrowski's a fit. I would have rather had a younger guy that could stick around for a long time and build all this stuff, like Neander. So that seemed great to me. But I'm not going to – I mean, obviously, Dombrowski's won, and he's won recently. So I'm not going to say it's a bad choice, but I'll say it's not the ideal choice.
And along the lines of that, what are the chances of them re-signing JT Realmuto at this point?
I figure they look good. And you know what the weird thing is about this? Like, it's so crazy to think about the whole Realmuto saga, because you've got, like, Bryce Harper wearing a shirt to practice every other day. Or you've got the fans, the pandemic crew who's protesting, basically. And, like, you go through this whole year where everybody's yelling and screaming that they needed to go and sign this guy. And Klentak didn't want to do it. McPhail didn't want to do it. Middleton didn't want to do it. They're like, let's see how the market plays out. they might be right. Like, it might turn out that Matt Klentak and all those guys, they nailed this with JT. It might be that he's actually not, like, $25 million a year, because McCann was the second option. He's already gone. He's going to the Mets.
Yeah.
So where's the spending coming from? You know, like, look at all these teams around the league and all the qualifying offers that didn't get submitted to these players. All these guys got declined on qualifying offers, including the Phillies with Didi. So you see all of these guys that hit the free agent market that would have normally gotten paid, and you go, okay, well, I don't know what the market is for JT. I can't see him making 25 a year at this point. So, yeah, he's probably back. He's probably back, and Klentak looks right about it, and nobody gives him credit, I think, is how this all plays out.
I sure hope JT's back, man. I mean, a guy like that behind the plate, cutting down runners at a rate way higher than anybody else playing the same position, swinging the bat like a first baseman, pretty much. It's very hard to find. I mean, maybe Gary Carter. I don't know. You can count on one hand the types of guys with that type of talent.
Well, yeah, and it's so cool to see, like, the first year when he got here especially, because he was throwing guys out. I mean, like, every single night he was throwing a guy out. He almost became must-watch television because of his defense, which is crazy. But
crazy.
That's what he was doing so consistently well. It's just like, oh, my God, I don't know if I've ever seen anything like this in my life. And it was so much fun. So, yeah, like, for what he means as a player, for what he means to Harper, just what he signals to the fan base by bringing him back, they got to bring him back at this point. I mean, if they don't bring him back now that the Mets are out, because I think if the Mets did it, people would be okay with it to some degree. It's like, well, this guy's got like $13 billion. He's paying him $27 million a year. You just got outbid at some point and you couldn't do it. But there's really not a good excuse at this point. So they got to go get him, man. They got to get him.
Yeah, man, I'm with you 1,000% on that, Vince. We really appreciate you taking the time out of your night, man. I told you on Twitter while I was kind of poking fun at the fact you had picked the Vikings over the Eagles in the 2017 conference title. I used to listen to you. I used to drop off my girlfriend late at night, and you'd be on, and I'd be driving home, and I would listen to you, and I was listening to you that night, and I remember thinking, man, I want to call in so bad, and I didn't call in, but now... we get to settle.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because I mean, I got killed for that, and in a sense, that's the most notable thing I've done in all the years that I've been on the radio now. Like, is being hilariously wrong about the Super or the NFC Championship game. And you know, the thing is, I don't regret it. I don't regret it even a little bit. If I was looking back on that, I would still make the same prediction. I don't care how wrong I was.
I made the same prediction as you. I agreed with you 100%. I did.
Yeah, Foles, like, look at Foles now, right? What is Nick Foles now?
Right? You're right.
He was terrible in Jacksonville. He was terrible in Chicago. He's not a good quarterback. So
no.
That's what I was figuring was going to happen. The Super Bowl and the NFC Championship game are such an exception to the rule for Nick Foles.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I made a decent bet. It was just, it didn't work out. It is what it is.
Yeah, they call lightning in a bottle. I mean, it's pretty apparent now looking back on it. They call lightning in a bottle. That team was invigorated by the fact they started 11-1 and confidence in football is so undervalued, that intangible confidence. They had it. It's almost like you could have had Jeff Garcia coming out of retirement and they might have won the bowl. In closing, Vince, we want to tell you about something we're starting here at the Vet Alumni. We call it the Vet Alumni Members Association. It's going to be comprised of a body of professionals from the Philly sports world like yourself who are also heavily influenced by the Vet. So we'd like to ask you to be an official member of the Vet Alumni Association, joining Rob Motti as the other member.
I'll gladly accept your invitation. I'm happy to be a part of the association.
Thank you, my friend. We are happy to have you.
Yeah, sure thing, guys. Thanks for having me on. It was a good time.
It's time for Prem's Picks.
These games are a blowout, a human lock. You can bet your children's unborn children on these games!
Oh, boy. It's that time again. Prem's Picks.
Tech, I missed a perfect picks week by one measly point.
Yes, you did.
The Cardinals easily dismissed the Giants in New York, as I predicted, and the Bills not only didn't lose to the Steelers by 2, but beat them by 11. The lone loss was Green Bay not covering 8 points in Detroit, but winning by 7. They held a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter late, but of course, Detroit ruined it with a backdoor cover.
Yep.
Losing by 7. Nevertheless, I stand at 14-10, through 24 picks, good for a 7-14 win percentage, which in any circle means winning
money.
Here are the Week 15 locks.
Locks!
Tech, give me the Birds to keep rolling. As they are 7-point road dogs in Arizona, Eagles plus 7. Now, while it's worth noting that the Eagles haven't won in Arizona since 2001, this line seems a bit disrespectful to me. After the Eagles' defense held the Saints to 21 points and dropped 24 on their top-ranked defense with a rookie quarterback making his first career start. I expect a run-based style to continue for the Eagles, utilizing Miles Sanders like we've talked about heavily, because the Cardinals have the 18th-ranked run defense in the league.
Right.
So the strength of the Arizona defense is their pass defense. They come in at 11th, very, very good against the pass. I expect another ball control style of play from the Birds, and even if they do lose, I expect a tight finish under one score. Eagles plus 7, lock.
Lock!
Give me the Vikings straight up at home to beat the Bears. Divisional tilt in Minnesota, and while the Bears look like an entirely different team this past Sunday at home, demolishing the Texans 36-7, they're possibly the most inconsistent NFL team in football, and Dalvin Cook wears purple.
Yes, he does.
Believe it or not, a once-stout Chicago run defense deck is middle of the pack this year, 17th against the run. I simply don't trust Mitchell Trubisky to lead a road win against Kirk Cousins. Vikings straight up. Lock.
Lock.
Lastly, Tech, you're going to like this one.
Yep.
Give me the Jaguars. Plus 13.
What?
In Baltimore. You may think this is a risky pick. But the Ravens are coming off of a very emotional victory on Monday night against a division rival Browns team, and they're primed for a game that they overlook, like the Jaguars. The Jags are coming off of a loss, like they usually are. However, quarterback Gardner Minshew is back for his second start after being out for 5 weeks.
He shook
off the rust last week. The Jags lost, but he shook off the rust. The game's in Baltimore, but I want to note, Tech, the Jags have kept some really impressive road games close this year with good teams, spoiling the spread, almost beating Green Bay at Lambeau Field, the Titans in Tennessee, and Cleveland in Jacksonville. All of those contests were decided by 4 points or less, no matter who the quarterback was. So, take the Jaguars, plus 13, lock.
Lock!
To recap, we have the Eagles, plus 7 in Arizona.
Lock!
Vikings straight up to beat the Bears in Minnesota.
Lock!
Jags, plus 13 in Baltimore.
Lock!
This has been Prem's Picks.
See you next week!
Vet Alumni.